Hey, what's good, everyone? It is Samir from Beat Fino Podcasts. Hope you're all well. Just taking this quick time to make a little shout out to our sponsors. Definitely recommend this one. Check it out. This podcast is sponsored by the Music Producers Guild of New Zealand, Aotearoa. The Music Producers Guild is an advisory service that assists and empowers our music producer industry here in New Zealand. Members get personalized contracts for their music production, free Serato Studio Sample and DJ Pro, access to discounted audio equipment and software, and advice from industry professionals. Buy your plugins through the Music Producers Guild website to help support us all in growing our community. For more information and to sign up as a member, please visit www.mpgnz.co.nz. Huge shout out to the Music Producers Guild of New Zealand for sponsoring Beat Fino. Super stoked to be able to share such a positive driving force for New Zealand music on the world stage. Please check them out. Super stoked to be in the guild myself. And I know for a lot of you guys wanting to take their music to the next level, super honored to have this opportunity to be around the industry professionals and soak up all the benefits. Back to here to the podcast. Thank you so much all for hanging in and enjoying this testimony so far. Feel free to pop a little message in to our page. Let us know how you've enjoyed this podcast. And stay tuned for more Beat Fino episodes. But here, back to the podcast. Here on Beat Fino Podcasts. Yo, welcome everyone to Beat Fino Podcasts. We're up to episode 36, 37, I believe. And this week, we have our good friend, Adam Lee. What's good, my man?
Hello, what's happening, my man? 36? We've done 36 of these.
Yeah, this is 36.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so we did the first 20 when we were all stuck at home because no one had an excuse.
Right, yeah,
at some point, at some point it's like, what are you really doing with all this free time? Yeah.
So were you just doing them on Zoom?
Yeah, because what the whole thing that started was I was on Zoom too, because I was like, oh, I get all this me time. I'm going to show everyone all my skills, production. Everyone can come and make remix requests and I'll take an act. And I wanted to make like a Facebook show.
Yep.
And pretty much what happened was I came in with the intent of everything's just going to work perfect. I'll buy this Zoom membership, which will let me do it without the watermark and do it Facebook and people can be on the Facebook, so everything can just run perfectly. And then I got the subscription, and because I'm using Hackintosh, it's a legitimate Mac Pro 2009 that runs like a Mac Pro 2019. So like,
right,
I had to sort of get to the point, for whatever reason, the official Mac drivers don't work with the official Zoom drivers.
Right.
And I was like, so the quality was
brutal.
Terrible.
Yep.
And I thought, I just paid all this money. And I was like, what am I going to do? And I realized, I've got to make the most of this somehow. So one of the perks was you could record for over 40 minutes.
Right.
And this is when Zoom was like pretty much skyrocketing around the world.
Yeah, because I hadn't even heard of Zoom prior to the lockdown, bro. Like, seriously. Like, it was one of those things that I swear, like, there were businesses that were using it for conference calls and stuff because obviously it's got, like, tremendous capabilities in that department. But it's like, I'm not a part of one of those businesses. So, you know, when someone said, like, oh, jump in Zoom, it was like, hey.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Skype? What happened to Skype?
Yeah, no, yeah. Everyone was wondering, like, everyone just knows Skype. But I think Zoom, what they did was they were big in China, apparently. This is what people say. I mean, I think for whatever reason, Zoom had this function of like the amount of people you could have. Like,
yeah,
there were literally businesses running from home. Like, and we're talking not just any old businesses.
No, like, that's talking, what I'm talking about.
We're talking
about,
like,
yeah, exactly.
Like New York Wall Street business.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's all functioning because these guys are like, well, you know, we're going to capitalize on this. Everyone's at home. And so, people are looking at their solutions, and Zoom was one of the few ones that could cater for that many people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, weird piece of software. Again, like, if the lockdown hadn't happened, I would never have heard about that. But like, I was in like calls with, I don't know if you experienced this, but like, I was in calls with like, you know, 20 people, and like, you can't get a word in. Because everyone's talking, and it obviously, like, you know, the software like puts them right in the, in the limelight kind of thing, you know, like you get the picture of, you know, their video and everything pops right up as they're talking. So it's just like, man, I'm just going to like mute my mic. And just
and
like,
even the chat will listen. Blow up because people are trying to find that one way to like still have a word when everyone else is talking.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, I could go on a tangent, but no, that was cool. So what happened was I pretty much realized from that point, I'm going to utilize this however way I can. And I somehow, for whatever reason, had the idea to actually start this prior to being stuck at home. And that's when I realized, wait a minute, so you're telling everyone you're going to do this. This is maybe going to make it easier. You can dive for 40 minutes and you can record directly. You could always record on the computer, but this can also just record the whole thing straight as soon as I hit end. I don't have to do anything. And it's Zoom. Everyone knows how to use Zoom.
Yeah.
People were using Zoom, so I was like, this is going to be like a walk in the park for people.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, 20 episodes was like literally about, hey, I scratch your back, you scratch mine, but I don't want you to scratch mine. I want you to scratch everyone's.
Like, sure. Yeah.
This is my own philosophy. So, yeah, that's the podcast.
Yeah.
But so have you managed to tune in on any seen it? Wow. Keeps shocking me. I'm like, wow.
No, of course. But I mean, you hit me up. So I was sort of like, well, it would be a little bit rude to like go, yeah, I'll do it. And then just not even like, you know, not even do any research. I had a look.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you've talked to some cool people. It surprised me. There's, because a lot of people, when they start out a project, they typically will stick to a niche, so they'll go like, I'll interview, say they're in the reggae scene, they're just talking reggae artists. What you've done is actually quite interesting. You've gone and spoken to a whole pile of people already. And I think that's really cool, bro, because it's like, I think diversity is like, it actually makes the difference. And it shows that your approach is versatile, I suppose.
From there, the best thing was Beat Fino, has moved into like, when I tell you, like, I'm inspired by Joe Rogan, I'm inspired from like all these cool things that start out kind of like people tune in, but you can come out with like this whole range of topics people talk about. But that means there's something for everyone, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll know this from Joe Rogan, for instance, is that there'll be some that you'll start and you'll be like, nah. So you go to the next one. And I mean, you know, if you document enough, because I mean, how many episodes is that dude up to? Like, he's got like 1600 podcasts or something crazy. So it's like, to actually write off a podcast based on one episode makes no sense, because it's like, this dude has talked for thousands and thousands of hours. It's like, in there is going to be something very cool. And I'm sure like eventually, I mean, it could already be the case, obviously, but like you'll have that. You'll definitely have episodes where you're just like, fire out. Yeah, and like, if you can get like enough of an audience going, whether, you know, that there's plenty of people checking it out all the time, eventually there'll be that one that sticks, because the conversation is just that fascinating, which is really cool. Wow. It's really cool.
Shot my bow. Well, it's really, really super exciting now that I've found this way of bringing people together at the same time, right? Because it all kind of started where I was really like on the grassroots of it, and really like as many of us do, we're sort of learning our way through doing music in a, like a computer sense is the best way for us to access it, and like obviously with Beat Finder being on the computer itself, I was quite lucky to have the skills, the knack right off the bat. But in a way, like the history of the people who have been on here, a lot of that comes from just like late nights at the Plaza or the McDonald's.
It's quite cool
because you, when you meet in person, it's like, actually, I kind of feel like we knew each other this whole time, you know?
Yeah, no, for real. And I think that there's something also about like meeting with other musos, as opposed to like, you know, if you weren't a muso, if you were a person who just ran a podcast but you weren't a muso, this would feel different, you know what I mean? Like, it would feel different, but because you are a muso, it's sort of like, okay, like you click on that level straight away. And there's something about like, I mean, obviously everyone's different and everyone's got their own grinds and yada yada, but like it seems as though musos recognize one another as family. You kind of have to, you kind of don't really have much of a choice, because otherwise, I mean, this industry will just, you know, like, you know, it'll just own you. And you have a responsibility, I think, in some ways, to get to know everyone and like actually pick each other up and and whatnot. But
Bro, no, it's so cool being in Palmy as well, because it's sort of like a very good size in terms of, like, you think you know Palmy, but then you'll meet someone new, like, but it's still at the point where you can see those familiar faces.
Yeah.
And I've found being in Palmy very humbling in the sense of, like, the time I go to Auckland on my school holidays is how I got to meet a lot of key people too. So while I was in Palmy, I was like scheming a hit list of people I wanted to meet.
Yeah.
I think what's cool about being in Palmy is people would always make, I don't know, have you ever like heard how people would just like think, oh, Palmy, like it's always like they drag Palmy down just to like joke around it.
100%.
But I took the joke and I worked with it. I'm like, that is a genuine joke. Like, and then I started telling people, the funnest thing here to do is like study. which actually, when you think about it, it's not a bad thing.
And it's also not that inaccurate in some ways. But I think that's the thing about Palmy, and I think this is true of any place, is that there is so much talent.
Mm.
Like, so much talent. And that's universal. And so to write off a place because it doesn't have a lot of things to do is actually, the wrong approach, because there's all these people that are actually very creative and capable of very cool things. And I think, to be honest, like, Palmy's creative scene is growing.
Yes,
it is growing, like, tremendously. Like, I think, you've got to shout out the UCOL course. Like, I mean, that bloody course, bro. Graham and Kane and Nigel, like, that's changed the game. Yeah. It really has, because it's put so many people, myself and others, in places that we just would never have, like, you know, stumbled upon otherwise. Like, I mean, for me, like, when I started, like, I didn't even sing, I didn't play guitar, nothing. And when I went into that course, I was just doing it because I worked out the music. Sort of, I suppose it was sort of like a, it was like therapy in some ways. It was just getting me through like ruthless times, and like my head was just a mess. And so for me, it really helped. And so when I went into that course, I wanted to be a guitarist.
Wow.
That's all I wanted to be, bro.
Yeah.
And so like I was on the grind and just playing all the time and blah, blah, blah. But like Graham, we did this ensemble singing one day, and I was just like murmuring because, you know, I was just nervous and like not comfortable singing. And he was just like, keep doing that. And then it was like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what started it. Just people that are, it's not so much that they go, oh, you're amazing. It's just that they go, hey, look, you've actually got something that if you grind and if you put your time into, you'll actually, you know, work it out and you'll turn it into something really cool. Which I suppose to a certain extent I have now, you know?
Yeah,
so we're actually at a point where it's like, you can actually make some cool stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. That's what Be Fun is about, is the testimony. And we share that as a way to celebrate the journey, the testimony, and that sort of like healing and therapeutic, like you said. Damien was pretty much that guy for me, as we were speaking earlier. And Damien, I can't wait to have him on, but bro, he's just,
I see you haven't had him on yet.
I haven't had him on, and that's like the for me, it's just, it's we've already spoke about it, it's just like, it's the time and place. It's just, that's what I love about this whole thing, is it's sort of like, it's very open in terms of everyone's schedules, but it's, in a way, it's very powerful in terms of not just the podcast itself, but that quality time sitting down.
And I honestly think the spontaneous nature in some ways, like, I mean, because you hit me up tonight. Being realistic, you hit me up tonight. So it's like, I mean, that's cool, bro. I actually think there's something about that that's better, because what it means is that I don't sit around for 2 weeks going, oh, what am I going to talk about? What am I going to think about? You know, I'd rather get in here and just yarn.
Yeah.
Just talk.
Yeah.
And see where it goes.
You can imagine with people's schedules, I'm always keeping that in the back of my head as a respect thing, but I'm also aware of like, hey, we'll play it by ear. And that's my favorite phrase, you know, because it helps people realize that's more or less life. You can never like chuck all your stakes in the ground. Will happen
exactly.
When you get stuck at home and you're reevaluating life.
And especially on a creative journey. Like, no creative journey works like that. Like, bro, I came into this industry thinking that I was like gonna just, you know, and like building blocks just boom, and then like there's the finished product, and then I was just gonna be chilling. Nah, man, nah, that's not how it went. It's you know, and it's like, don't get me wrong, it wasn't that I felt like I was above anyone or anything like that. I just thought that my approach was going to make things easy.
Like,
I thought it was going to be easier.
Yeah.
And in reality, like, I mean, you could probably argue that in most grinds, but I think something like music is just, it's just a weird one, because I mean, look at even the income of musicians. Like, holy moly, bro, this is gone. Like, it really is. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no, this is a facts, bro. We've been talking about this before. Yeah, yeah, carry on.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about, like, there's no physical copies really anymore. I mean, you could argue that maybe vinyl's coming back and yada yada, but at the same time, I think that to actually get your music to vinyl, it's not so easy.
No, it's not so easy.
You can't just make one. You can't just rock up and be like, hey, can you make me like three records?
Because like, it's like you said, that thing just coming in on the back, it's certainly not like the... It's a more bespoke thing, you know? So it's certainly like 100%. That in itself just shows, okay, physical is out. And as I was growing up, bro, this is so cool that we're talking about this. I was reading books, a couple, but I was mainly watching YouTube people and people who were generous enough to just share everything down on the plate. This is like DJing around the world. This is how it is. This is how it is with the music production.
Sure.
And just when you soak that in like a sponge, it's cool to actually take it, run with it. But also, yeah, you don't let it. But the great thing I found was that those YouTube people, those people writing the books, they didn't just say, oh, this is how it is. Man, this sucks. They said, this is how it is. But it is possible to, you know, at the back of your thing, maybe you can play the game a little bit. And then when the time comes, you can flip around, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is that whole thing of, like, when talent meets opportunity, because there is a luck element, and I think that anybody who, like, comes into this game thinking that... Because it is a game.
Yes. Like, oh, you know, there anybody, we go. Yes, exactly. I mean,
anybody who comes into this game and thinks that it's just going to be a walk in the park is dreaming.
Yeah, and these middlemen. That's why we say game.
It's a hustle. Mm. It actually is a hustle. And I think that there's... Probably the best thing that you can do, and I believe this to be true, is just network your ass off, you know? Just network and network and network. And then eventually, if, you know, if the, like, I don't know, the stars align, basically, because that's where the luck comes in. It's like, you know, where talent meets opportunity.
Yep.
And right, so time, you want to be on the grind all the time.
Yes,
and I think that, don't get me wrong, you need a break every now and again, but it's important to monitor... I suppose, like, your threshold for work, because for me, like, I've burned out before, totally burned out before.
Thank you, man.
You get to a point where it's just like, oh my days, like, you know, like, I'm done, like, I can't do this.
It's just life coming to an end before my eyes. Can I live some before I die?
What is fascinating? Maybe you've had this as well. So I released a single in September called Do It All Again, and when that dropped, the day it dropped, my flatmate, her name's Elise, she said to me, you must be so happy. And I was like, I'm almost miserable.
Yeah.
Like, I'm almost miserable. And the reason why is because I'd just been busting my ass off, you know, trying to get this thing out and just working and working and working. And then finally when it dropped, I was like, what do I do now?
Have I peaked?
I don't know.
Yep, so much energy, you know.
Yeah, like, and because you put all that into it, it's like, can I ever top this? Like, that's the other feeling. You get this feeling of like, I don't know if I could ever do better than this.
I'm pretty happy about it at the same time. I'm happy in the sense of like, that ended pretty quick. Yeah, well, in a sense, yeah. I'm not going to lie. I felt the same in the beginning of Yala because I was like, oh, well, I'm glad I have my project files, but man, I was pretty paranoid for the last 10 years of just making sure I didn't lose them. That paranoia I don't take creatively by all means is I look to what got me this far is just free flow, like you were talking about the journey. It's only human to be thinking, whoa, like it's a cool thing, but like when people tell you like, oh, Samir, that was a cool music, I'm like, I didn't intend to do a music video. Like,
sure.
This is by no means what it looks like.
Yeah, sure. And so how did that come about, that music video? Like, what was the deal with that? Because like I when I watched it, I was just like, well, you know, in the middle of a lockdown, there's no way this dude's just touring around the world, you know? Like, so how did that, like, how are you getting the footage and stuff?
That's it, bro. So I went overseas a couple years ago.
So it is old footage though?
Yeah,
like,
well,
okay. Because I was like, how are you getting this? Like, you know, if you like hit up people around the world, it's like, can you go and film? Like,
I'll be honest, it was going to be all my own footage. And what happened was we realized some of the stuff on my phone just genuinely shaky camera or whatever.
Sure.
But some of it was cool. What I wanted to do was I wanted to kind of do it. You know, like I realized people, like we were talking about before the show, okay, people are going to listen with their eyes. What do I have to show people? Even though I'm not wanting to show them something, I had to come to them and say, oh, I can show something, you know? Life's all about give and take, right? And
sure.
So I'm starting to get to this point where it's like, why not try and bring this together with the exact vibe of the track, which is like an Arabic fusion of Algeria, you know, travels around the North Africa area where there's the French colonized. And so I had all these sort of like ideas, but I couldn't see them. My friend helped me see them. And my friend's a great friend. Like, he's so behind the scenes. He's one of those been there, done that guys. In fact, I won't even name him for that very reason. We like to think about it. Like, we share so much affinity on, like, that sort of ability to know what goes into this stuff, like music video wise. And so he helped me realize, okay, so you're going to have to play the game here. And so, okay, we'll do a music video. Are you sure you want to pull this time to help me out with this, bro? Because I don't know any video editing.
Sure.
At all. And we pulled it off because I was pretty much just the director of In Sorts. He was the guy who's producing it. But I learned so much producing it just through being able to sit down and like be humble enough to be like, okay, I'm gonna trust you to help me make this video.
Sure.
And we got to the conclusion where it was like, yeah, this is gonna be like exactly what does the music say here? What do you wanna say here? And it's like, I've been overseas, but like everyone was telling me, so yeah, stop talking about overseas, we're stuck at like hope we can't go.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Like, this like no, like do you not like have dreams? Do you not see yourself going to the deathbed with like a sense of, oh, you know, I gave it my all.
Yeah.
And that's why I love the fact that I was able to travel. So sure. My dad said, hey, let's go overseas a few years ago, and but when I was 15, I was like, actually, yeah. Like, I don't have the money, but if you can help me out with that, then I'm keen.
Yeah.
And we worked it out, and my dad and I, we bonded. I've never been closer to my parents ever.
That's very cool. Bro.
And it's like, cool. It's kind of because like sometimes you got to step into the unknown. It's, but at the same time, the unknown can be the blessing, you know?
That's true of everything, I think. Yeah. It's like there's something really cool about how, you know, if you've got a plan, very, very, like, I suppose really you could say, is it actually going to go as you expected it to?
Yeah.
You might reach what you wanted, but there's no way that the pathway, especially in music, there's no way the pathway is going to be clean cut. Like, I've played shows, bro, where, like, I'm like, where am I? You know, like, I'm dripping out into the middle of nowhere. You know, some places hire me to come and play some cafe that's literally just in the middle of the Wop Wops. And I'm like, I can't believe this, you know, how did I end up here, you know? Stuff like that, and it all molds you into the person that you are, and even the style that you want to, I suppose, like put out into the world. Without those moments, it's like, so without your travel and whatnot, like, I mean, you probably wouldn't have made Yellow, like, the way that it is,
probably,
you know?
Wouldn't have made Beat Funner, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I mean,
bro, I was trying to find some way of keeping in touch. Beat Funner saved my life in a sense of not going as off the rails as I could have, because I can be honest and say that, yeah, like a lot of stuff happens when people have to like face each other in a house.
Yeah, right? Oh, bro, 100%.
Well, people make a Facebook post about domestic violence. I'm like, whoa, wait, yeah,
bro. I something funny to tell you that I thought I'd wait until the podcast to tell you this, bro. So I used to busk a lot, like in Palmy. And anyway. So yeah, but I know that you probably remember that because so there was this one day. So you walked past me, and I knew who you were because people had sort of mentioned you and whatnot. And sort of, I knew of you. I suppose you could say. So like when you walked past, I was like, I know that guy, right? So I'm like playing away, and then you like looked over at me like for a second, and then you kept walking. And anyway, and then in my mind, I'm not even kidding. Like, it's funny that we're sitting here just having a casual yarn now because at the time, bro, I was just like, wonder what he thought of that, whether he was like, it's horrific. You know, like, I didn't know.
Yeah,
I actually didn't know. I was just like, I wonder like what kind of dude that guy actually is. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, because you can't, that's the thing when people walk past, like, oh, they could be genuinely like, gotta, you know, do their own thing.
Yeah, well, I didn't know, like, it was funny because I kind of had a feeling that you might've been like in the music scene one way or another, but like, I didn't know anything.
Yeah,
and so I was just like, I wonder if he's just like, you know, just like a non-muso who's just walking past going, oh yeah. Or like a muso who's like, you know.
Yeah.
This is what I think of that.
It's
you know?
Funny though, because you do it unintentionally just for your ear getting trained, eh? Like
yes.
you're critical.
Now that's something that I had to dial back a little, because I was going to shows with my arms crossed, just standing there, just like not even moving, just staring. And it was sort of like, it's not like, don't get me wrong, like I was enjoying
the air training. Yeah, you enjoyed your air training.
Exactly. It's just that like the people playing the show are looking at you like, what is he doing? He's just like standing there judging. And it's like, I'm not judging. It's just that I'm listening
in a way.
I'm listening in a way that you like
critical,
know.
Yeah, critical.
It's critical, but it's like it's actually for my own
Your own
learning.
Yeah, and like the amount of times mix engineers I've followed on YouTube talk about being critical in the mix, and I'm like, so it's so cool you mentioned that, because I think it'll help a lot of people know, like you said, even as I was walking past on the street, like, yeah, like there's an element of like, cool, that's actually what's really happening here, you know?
Yeah.
It's no, so cool. But like, oh, I'm just so blessed that, yeah, I would have bumped in a few times. And yeah, like now that you mentioned it, I remember seeing you around the place a little bit. And all I knew was like, okay, there's a lot of people doing their thing. And whether or not I had like much awareness of how long they'll be there. Because in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking, yeah, like, you know, live your day like it's your last day. Mm-hmm. And I think beat vets helped me a lot with beat finding, because it means like, yeah, sporadically, hey, do you want to jump up tonight?
Yeah.
But yeah, like now that you mentioned, it's the same thing. I've met so many buskers and people on the streets, even if they're just beggars. Yeah. And it's that street presence is like a dynamic that shifts the whole like grind, like, you know, the rat race, whatever you want to call it, or that, you know, that norm. And I'm really excited getting into busking, but yeah, I'd love to hear a bit more about the journey with busking, my bro, like, because that was probably a big part of your journey, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, well, I mean, I think I found my confidence busking probably because I did the UCOL course, so it's for anyone that doesn't know what it is, it's a contemporary music performance course, which, so that actually focuses primarily on the performance side of things, so you're actually getting up on stage, building that confidence, because it's for people that are starting out, it really is. There are people that, you know, there's been some phenomenally very, very talented people that have, you know, been performing their whole lives and come and do the course as well. But I don't know if they get as much out of it in that regard, because I think that it's perfect for someone who feels like they probably could never do that. You know, and then by the end of the course, they're actually confident, or to a certain extent confident on stage. And so for me, because I was never a singer and I wanted to be a guitarist, it was a weird thing, right? So I was like, okay, what can I do to get some more hours in? Because we were playing a gig once or twice a month kind of thing on this course. And it was like, well, this is cool, but I'm still freaking out every time, you know, because this is not enough. It's not enough, like, getting in front of people.
Yeah.
And so busking for me, so I started and I went and I played guitar with no amp, no nothing. It was just me and my guitar. And I'd kind of murmur sing. Like, I wasn't really singing.
Yeah.
I was just kind of murmur singing, maybe letting out the occasional note that I was like, oh, yeah, maybe I can be proud of that. You know, really, like, really in my own head about it.
Yeah.
And people were going, like, walking past, naturally. And as they'd walk past, that murmur would just turn into me just playing guitar. Like, I literally would just stop. I was like, I can't sing in front of people yet. Yeah. So, like, which was fine.
Cool.
And I just slowly treated it as, like, okay, you know, if I just keep getting out there every day. And I busked every day of 2017, every single day of 2017, 365 days of the year kind of thing. And so, like, you know, by the end of that, there'd been days where I like, you know, my voice was just munted and I'd just still go out and just do it.
Yeah, and you'd be playing the guitar some days.
Fingers, bro, like, they were destroyed. They completely destroyed. Like, I've kind of dipped back on the guitar. So the music that I'm producing now is typically less guitar oriented. And so, like, when I get in the studio, I might put a, you know, a little guitar run or something in the track, but it's not primarily guitar anymore. And so my fingers are kind of, they're getting sort of back to normal, but bro, they were like steel, like, you know, playing that much. Because I'd go out and I'd busk for 4 or 5 hours sometimes. Because another thing as well, another massive factor was I was broke as, like, really broke, man. And so, like, the only way that I could survive was to go out and hope that if I played for, you know, if I played for 5 hours, I could probably come back sometimes with you know, 40, 50 bucks. And people are like, oh, that's not much money. And it's like, but it dries up.
Yeah.
Because if you keep busking the same place, the same people walk past.
Yeah.
And if they give once, that doesn't mean they're gonna give again.
No, exactly.
And I don't expect them to give either. And that's how, this is another thing. And so, you know, if you just keep playing the same place, you're only gonna make 10 bucks in an outing after a while, because everyone that was going to give has given. You know, they've seen you, they know you. Like the people at the cafe, I forgot what it's called now, O'Brien's. Yeah, you're just outside there. So like they must have known my whole bloody set list, bro. I played every day outside of downtown. And you know, if that spot was taken, you'd go somewhere else. But that was my favorite because it's they had like nice acoustics.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah. And you know, eventually I upgraded to a speaker and everything, and so like and a microphone, and I went from, you know, rocking like a $10 mic that I'd had when I started a podcast when I was like 14, 15.
Ah, the funny ones,
yeah. Yeah, just one of those goofy bloody, whatever that is. Yeah. And that was cool, but like eventually I got the SM58 and everything, and you know, and then we were off, and I think that was probably what changed the game, actually, getting that microphone, as weird as it sounds. And I picked up a harmony pedal, and so you know, like it's just a bit of a head turner, I suppose, now, because there's quality to it. And you know, I got a nice speaker from Jeff at Music Planet. He hooked me up. I went and asked him sort of like what was best for the streets, because the streets, everything needs to be battery powered.
Yeah,
like you can hit up shops and say, hey, can I use your power, but I just think that to me is just a bit cringe.
It's kind of like the sort of spur change, you know, like that sort of like the very kind of like, I've heard that one before.
To me, like I've always treated this industry like I want to be as self-sufficient as I possibly can be, and where that falls down is production for me. So like you can only put so much energy into each grind, you know, you can't. Some people I think naturally have it and they can just go and do everything.
Jacob Collier. just thinking about him.
What a freak, man. What a freak. He's a nutter, bro. Yeah.
It's like musolingo tuning him.
Exactly, there's people like that, but I think for the most part, you know, like your average dude, like someone like me, you know, I'm someone who how I would sort of rank my skills is that I would say songwriting and composition is at the very top.
Nice.
Quite good at that. Singing, probably second. Like I don't consider myself incredible, like I really don't, but I think that I can hold a tune, I can write an interesting melody now, and that's something that I've just honed, and that's more of the composition side of things, but probably that. And then, you know, production's like way down on the list, bro. Way down. So I can make a cool demo, and you know, and I can send it off to someone, but I'm gonna always require that person to finesse it, and, you know, and make it into the dream, really, in that regard. Because like, in my eyes, I also get to in my own head. So like, I'll just be mixing, and then all of a sudden I'll play it next to another song. I'm like, this just sounds terrible.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm just like, this just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I talked to, so Toby Lloyd, he's the dude who's been producing me. Do you know who he is?
I think their name sounds very familiar, but
Tiny Triumph Recordings, like really cool dude, bro. Really cool dude.
Docs connecting, bro, that's amazing.
Dude is awesome, bro. So I, he hit me up. So I made an EP, recorded with Caleb Hickmott.
He had him on the podcast.
I haven't heard that one. I might actually check that out.
He's coming in a few. Got it in the bag.
Cool, bro. He's a cool dude. So he mixed my he recorded my EP, and then it was mixed by one of Lewis Barker's friends. His name's Jordan. Jordan like did a really cool job, and he, like together, you know, the thing came together. And then Toby hit me up, and he was like, "Hey, bro, I heard your EP. Like, you know, I so really
Jordan
like
Jordan Olsen, by the way.
Jordan Olsen, Jordan Olsen. You know Jordan Olsen. I think you know them all.
Yeah, from Church Fellow. Right. What a cool guy.
Honestly, what a cool community, eh? But it's all good. So then Toby hit me up and he was like, "Hey, man, like I heard your EP. It reminds me of, I think you said Jason Mraz or something like that." And I was just like, "Oh, cool, bro. Never heard that comparison before." But and so we got talking, and he said like something along the lines of like, if you ever want to send me demos or anything like that, please do. I'd love to hear it, right? And then I kept that in mind because I sort of looked at the things that he'd done and stuff, and he was like the head lecturer at Massey for production and stuff. And I'm like, who is this guy, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, so I'm sitting at home thinking like, one day when I've got some cash and stuff, like I'm hitting this dude up. So I when I've got the right song as well and everything, when everything aligns. And so I just sort of played around one day. So I looked on YouTube and I wanted to just get into a bit more production. And I looked at like how to record different pop styles basically. And there was there was one and it was like, how to sound like Taylor Swift, or how to record like Taylor Swift, right? And I was just like, I'll click on it. Because yeah. I'm interested at least, like, I mean, Taylor Swift's not really my cup of tea, but I'm still interested in how it comes together, you know, all the layers and why it sounds the way it does. So I clicked on that. And then just the way that it was played in and stuff, I was like, oh, that's actually quite cool. And so, like, I just took, like, the idea from that, I suppose, popped it into the door, and started playing around. The next thing you know, I've got this track where I'm just like, holy shit, like, what is this, right? And so then, so let's do it all again that you've heard. And I sent it to him, I sent him a demo, because I just came up with a chorus, and it was a real botched job, mate. It was just terrible. Like, the demo was just shocking. Yeah. But I sent it to him, and like, the idea was still present. And he said to me, he was like, that's cool, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, if you want to, like, I'd be keen as to work on that. And I was like, sick. Okay, and that's where it started. And so I was going to go down to Wellington and record with them and do all that. And then the lockdown hit. So we had to postpone it all. And you know, and it was a real messy year, 2020. But we you know, we got there. And what an experience, bro. So this guy, like, I always say this about the difference between mastering engineers and mix engineers is hilarious, because mastering engineers are like suit and tie. Mix engineers are like, you know, band shirt, like they're sitting, standing in a garage doing whatever, you know, and I think that's sick, bro. I love the culture. Mm. I love the culture of all that. So rocked to his place in Johnsonville. We record this thing and just like a little, like probably smaller than this little garage like studio. And like, you know, what a setup. Very, very cool. Very cool. And we like smashed this thing out, and it clicked for me, because I'd heard stuff that he'd done, and I was like, man, obviously this is at a very high you know, professional level. But at the same time, like, I had never really given much thought to like how insane the process really was and how good it really was. Yeah. And there was this moment, bro, where we both had the headphones on, and it got to the end of the session, because we did 2 days, end of the session on the second day, and we put the headphones on. And this is my like most memorable moment from the whole thing. Both with the headphones on, we had a playthrough, and not only Toby but myself at the same time, because we had our eyes closed and we were just listening. Yes. And then at the very end, we took it off and we both turned to each other and was like, that's done. Yeah. You know, that doesn't need anything more, because you keep adding stuff in. And it's like, there's just a moment where like, I thought it was really cool, because he's obviously got an incredible ear, because that's his job.
Yeah.
It's not that I didn't consider myself to have a good ear, but I didn't realize that I actually do know when a song is done, which was really cool to learn. Exactly. It was cool to learn, bro, because we both said that, and you know, and when it got to the end, it was just, this is done. It was a very cool feeling, and that's my most memorable thing. You'd think it would be like part of the recording process or something, but it literally was the end where we both went, that's done. You know, that's actually like, that doesn't need anything more. And then he took to mixing it, and then it got mastered in Germany by this dude, Robin Schmidt. He's a really cool dude, bro. He's mixed like a bit of the Arctic Monkeys, I think, and like that real crazy dude.
Are you saying he mixed or mastered? Cause
he mastered. So Toby mixed.
Oh wow! So he's worked with him. Yeah.
So this dude in Germany, like, freak, bro. Like, absolute freak. He's like, he's been like mastering like Grammy nominated, blah blah blah. Like, this dude's an animal. And it was like $200 to get it mastered. Yeah. And people are like, oh man, that's so expensive. It's like, it's really not. It's really not. $200.
It represents probably 20 years of his life.
Yeah.
No one understanding what he was doing.
Yeah.
No, I mean, bro, like, people don't realize what you're paying for mastering is someone's life learning. Like, I look at mastering like a very perceptual thing.
And
you hear it from people who are like when you go master the mix. Oh yeah, people who are kind of like mix engineers and also have delved into mastering. But yeah, there's like it's two different hats, like, you know, it as is. We know. And but perception, it's a life. People actually have their whole life experience that brings them to be able to do mastering. So like when you're paying that $200. Yeah, it's more.
Oh, bro. Yeah, and you can tell the difference between, like, I don't know if you've ever digitally mastered, you know, on a website.
Yeah.
And then you compare that to like how the human does it, and it's not even a comparison.
Yeah.
Like, because a couple of times, like I use SoundCloud a couple of times to master a track, and hey, you know, it does the job.
Yeah,
but what I find is that it just like, because you can decide how. how like intense the mastering's going to be digitally. And the thing is that you might, but I don't have an ear for that, and most people don't have an ear for that.
Yeah.
And so when you're going, I really like it super intense, loud, and and super loud, and it's a mess, bro.
Yeah.
And so the best thing you can do is not bloody touch it. Just leave it alone and let somebody else who's spent their whole life, doing that.
End up doing it yourself for your whole
life. And also, like, you look at the price of the gear, bro. Real mastering gear, it's like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, to have a whole setup. And that's so, like, you know, you compare that, how is that going to compare to a computer? A computer's never going to work that out. And it doesn't have the human input, because a human goes, I really think it would sound cool if it punched here.
Yes.
The computer doesn't do any of that. The computer goes, all right, I'm going to squish this into oblivion. You know, I'm going to compress
this. All it's looking at is a peak with potentially mid-side and a bit of, like, artifacts within. Stuff and frequency. But, I mean, that's two things to work off, compared to a mastering engineer who's literally being aware. Oh, because mastering is actually, you'll hear it from any master, it's about taste. And again, that's why DJs still exist in the realm of a Spotify or a DJ app. It's no, DJs have the taste.
Definitely, And I think that, like, mastering engineers, like, if they don't have much experience, which, hey, I haven't really worked with people that haven't, I've always paid that extra bit, you know, and just got it done properly. But, like, nice. If they don't know kind of like the full ins and outs, what I find is that they can overcook it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it just gets crushed.
I did plenty of mastering in my time, and I'll apologize to everyone. I crushed a whole lot of people's shoes. People didn't have anyone else to go to for mastering in the end, and they were happy with what they got.
Sure.
Because at the time, you know, especially when you're young, you're happy with something loud and it translates, does the job. But yeah, I can honestly say, I look back and say I distorted people's stuff. I absolutely crunched, you know, dynamics. And, you know, it's so cool to sometimes learn the hard way. Like, man, I can just tell with, like, what we've been talking about. Mastering is, I mean, because Beatfunnel, we try to cover the whole spectrum of people's opportunities in music. People might be listening here saying, oh, I want to dedicate my whole life to learn about this sorcery. It's a real thing, eh?
Yeah.
And, I mean, we have a few people who've mastered in New Zealand, but it's interesting how many people I've personally met, talked to, they have to go to overseas. And this is almost like a call. Anyone listening, like, there is a space for mastering people in New Zealand, yeah?
Definitely. And I mean, there's a waiting list for the top dudes. Like, there really is. I mean, I cannot believe, like, how long. And don't get me wrong, this is not a criticism. It's just how long it was before I actually got the track back, because Robin. That it was sent off to, he was like, yeah, you know, I can fit it in like a month and a half. And I was like, damn, you know, like, how long does it really take to master a track? So how many must you have?
He's not taking a night off. He is not, tell you that now.
Nah, exactly. And so he must be getting hundreds and hundreds of these, like, tracks and just smashing them all out.
Yep.
So a month and a half is sort of like, it's just like, wow, man. Like, that really is, that encapsulates all that you do, basically, you know?
Yeah.
And I just thought it was so cool. It was a very cool experience, and by the time it came out the other side, and, you know, there's something about spending the proper cash and getting that track back and being like, this is just amazing, you know, because I, you know, I feel like I recorded it at the best I possibly could, so all the input was really good, and then from there it's like, then it's just these wizards take over. So, like, Toby just smashed this thing out of the park. Like, his mix, I'm serious, like, and don't get me wrong, Master sounds fantastic, but his mix, there's something about, like, if you're like, I suppose if you've got an ear for sort of what's going on and everything, like, I'd almost say that the mix could almost be better.
That's it, bro.
Because you are taking just the tiniest bit of life out of it with the mastering, naturally. Mm. But that, it's also, I mean, it rounds it out.
Yeah.
But it does take just a little bit of the dynamic out, naturally. Mm. And Toby's mix, like, it was as pumped to the days as it possibly could.
It was going to withstand any master.
Oh, it was incredible, bro. And, like, there was just something about the feeling of knowing, it was like, oh man, I really, really created something amazing, like, with these people. And, like, I'm going to work with Toby again in April, so that's coming up. So yeah, like, couple of months more. Yeah, 2 months, 28th, 29th of April. So we're going to go and record another one. And I'm looking forward to this. It's a bit different. You heard it just before as well.
Yeah.
Sent that through to you.
But, yeah, exactly. I can't help but notice, like, the ability for people who, let's be honest, you sent me a demo today, what did I have time to listen on my phone?
Yeah.
It's like, that's what, like, it's incredible about, like you said, an amazing mix, and then, like, you know, with the mastering person, it's like playing the game. Like I made Yala and I ended up having the master myself, which I'm happy with.
Did you produce all of that fully?
I did the whole thing.
Bro, it is insane. It's really good.
Does it sound like I've paid for a mastering guy?
100%, bro. I'm being dead serious, and I'm not just like talking you up because you're in the room. Yeah. I'm serious, bro. Like, that track is sick. Like, I hit you up about it.
I was so close to getting mixing, at least, from Tom. Tom was busy. Tom Lee. Sure. From Woodcut.
Right.
Yeah, and so he couldn't. There was the only person I could ever trust with a mix.
Bro, you did very, very well. Like, very well. I'm impressed, man. Like, I seriously, like, when I saw it, and I think the visuals helped a lot as well. Like, the video art, you made a very good decision to add video to that. Because, there was just something about the way that it was like, man, this feels like it took it to another level, I think, because obviously the video is very crisp and it looks very nice.
Yeah.
And the sound is crisp. So, like, if you self-produce that, well done, bro. Because seriously, that's next level.
I will happily take that. I forgot the phrase they say, but yeah, I'll happily take that one. So what happened was, that was more or less most of what you hear was done in 3 hours at BP on headphones.
Which BP?
BP Rangitiki Street. My whole sort of philosophy is like, it's probably not the 10,000 hour rule, but it's probably at least 1,000 hour. Yeah. And that's gotta be something like, the amount you can gain a perception of mixing on, say the monitors you can't afford through headphones is what's taken the world by storm. I can name names right now, people who have come from like the slums of India to be featured on Martin Garrix's podcast. And this guy was teaching me how to not distort my sounds when I was 13 on a YouTube video on one of those screen recording softwares, HyperCam 2 or whatever. Like, we used to record videos. So like the testimony of him being like, hey bro, I don't tell anyone this. This is a guy in India who did these real cool videos. For people actually listening out there thinking, Samir, you did that all yourself? Like, kind of no. I learned everything about production on Facebook through Facebook groups.
Yeah.
And so when I was 13, my friend Michael Deans and I, we were part of these like international Facebook groups for producers. And we were the two people from New Zealand, but all these kids like in Europe.
Yeah.
Huge, like we were all 13-year-olds, but they were like 13-year-olds like taking the world by storm. Like, hold on, like we're on the same, like congrats, like everyone was so supportive. It was like, congrats, bro.
There was
like a natural energy. And I'm tapping back into like this with Beatfront, but it's like, we were all just championing each other on.
Sure.
And like, no matter who was being like successful in their career at 15 years old, getting played by the biggest DJs in the world, like we were all just like, oh, cheer, bro. Like, we were so like, in a way, just like, at the same time, like, okay, there was a question, like there would be questions or in posts like, how do I do this? And the same person, like literally living their dreams at 15, is like going right down to the basics. Say,
sure.
Oh, like to us in New Zealand, like Michael, like would have trash mixed up, like absolute trash, bro. Just talking distorted or resonance on everything. it was just like screeching your earphones. And yeah, this is there's people out there who like, you can honestly look back and say, yeah, if you're wondering like how this was, like, yeah, like there's these amazing opportunities to sort of like, yeah, dive in. And I think when we're talking about busking, bro, it really hit home. You did it every single day that year.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things, bro. Like, what I was actually going to ask you is like, what was a game-changing moment for you? Like, when all of a sudden, when it was just trash. It's like, at what point did you all of a sudden go, actually, that's all right.
Yeah.
You know, like, because obviously there's been a moment tracks, where that transition.
So I managed to have a track on this label called Peak Hour Music. And it's the original label before anyone got to know people like Deadmau5, Dioro, Zed. And I didn't know that at the time either. But Peak Hour Music was sort of like a label on my radar because I was following some of the people in New Zealand who were making moves around the world. And Jason R. Moore was part of, he was an Auckland DJ. He was on Peak Hour Music. And it was a genuine cool track. I was like, okay, like, it almost sounds like you didn't make that, man. It's too good.
Sure.
And I'm not gonna lie, you know, it's cool to get assistance where it helps. But the bros genuinely put a lot of work in. So I realized, okay, like, okay, so this is like an opportunity to at least have some guts. For whatever reason, I was in Auckland that day thinking, I got nothing better. I'm broke. I'm broke. Just like you. I'm broke. I've got nothing to lose. So I just spent one day in the city library, and I think I was in the K Road, like little street arcade place. And yeah, I was just sitting on my laptop and I just sent that track to everyone, and everyone said no. And then PKR Music said, hey, this isn't really a good fit for our main label, but we've got a new sub label called Hot Slice. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, like, I got to experience and learn on the job what it was like to be offered, like, yeah, like a contract agreement for being on a label, which was literally pushed around the world, literally through some of the biggest channels. Like, they had a show on Sirius XM. Like, they had their own, pretty much, they had thousands of listeners at any time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if PKR, it may be related to Ministry of Sound, but there's like these whole, off, as you know, with the music industry, like the amount of layers of everything. Like,
oh, bro.
Like, yeah, like, yeah, you actually, like, sometimes you picture, like, oh, I'm just like five levels down from Warner now, opposed to 10. It's shocking. So everyone's like a label of a label when you start going down, like, as you've probably found out, yeah?
Yeah, well, labels make me a little nervous, bro. But not because, it's not because I don't think that there are some phenomenal labels out there.
Yeah, like, my experience is good.
Yeah, sure, exactly. Yeah, but like, I mean, I've heard some nightmare stories, yeah, bro. You know, people who, because to me, it's sort of like, I would rather have a very solid repertoire that, you know, multiple people are hitting me up and hitting me up,
yeah,
as opposed to, because yeah, I find like there's some sharks, bro.
Yeah,
there's some sharks out there.
There's people who are more just like a platform, and then there's others who are like, you're pretty much just working for us.
Yeah, and I think that
you don't have a platform.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
We just made you think you had one.
Yeah, yeah. The exploitation is a little bit. Yeah, it's a tricky thing to maneuver around, because don't get me wrong, like, it's not just record labels. This industry is
exactly.
It's an interesting one, brother. Yeah. There are some sharks, and like I've encountered them just in gigs.
Oh,
just
by me gigs. Too.
Oh my god, unbelievable. Yeah. Like, it really blows my mind. It's like the number of people that I've played a show and then they just haven't paid me.
Yeah,
and like I'm just like, are you human?
Yeah,
like, are you human?
I look at them if they're enjoying anything nice, or like a nice shirt, or like, this is how, you know, we can share affinity here, bro. Like,
sure,
you know, being broke, it's like, hey, bro, like, it's a nice shirt, bro. Like, you know, like, yeah, how do you feel sleeping at night, bro?
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
if you can't pay me, like, yeah, there's probably a TV sitting in your house.
Right, I've had bars, and I won't name them, but like, I've had bars that it's like, you know, I'm watching them turning over thousands of dollars a night, and then they just don't even pay me, and it's like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, how does that work? And, you know, you hit them up email after email after email, because, like, I'm not someone to just be like, oh, okay, yeah, all good. You know, like,
yeah, you come
I'm
up from
like,
the ground.
Yeah, it's like, look, you in writing told me you'd pay me X amount, and then I played the gig. So it's like, this is legally binding.
Yes.
And hey, I'm not like looking to take you to small claims and do all that. Like,
it's just,
but at the same time, I'm not gonna tell you that. I'm gonna absolutely make it seem as though I'm prepared to go that far.
Yeah, and, I would.
And, you know, and eventually they pay up, but it's kind of like, why is it that you're prepared to just butcher a relationship, you know? Because to me, it's like, isn't that networking? Like, isn't that the whole point?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, what are you gonna end up with? Like, if you just keep doing that to the good musicians, eventually you're just gonna have trash, you know, like playing your venues. And don't get me wrong, like, there is some there are some artists that, like, honestly, bro, that it's like, you know, like, I think bars naturally, you know, it's just like production, you know, I spent a lot of money, therefore got a good product, but I could have spent very, very little and gone to someone who has no experience and gotten trash. And the same thing goes with musicians. It's like, if you're gonna hire someone, because there's a total difference between playing music because you're passionate about music and playing music because it's your job. And so if it's your job, it better be bloody good, you know? Like, it better be tight, because otherwise it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
you know?
And it's that balance.
Yeah, exactly. And so to try and, I suppose, like, weave your way between the sharks is tricky because you don't want to get bit. It sucks, man. It sucks. And I've been there. I've been there before. And it's like...
I'm just thinking about, like, stories that we just did. Like, I'll just, like, say the smallest thing. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, next time we get... But, like, it's like there's inside jokes I spell out on the show of the people who have listened this far, who are dedicated. And that is, like, yeah, like you said, it's almost like an art in itself of knowing how to navigate somewhat and survive, like, through sharks. I mean, it's a great way to say it, sharks.
Yeah, well, they are sharks, bro.
You're somehow still in the water and you're not bitten.
That's exactly what they are. And you are in the water. That's another thing to keep in mind. Like, people don't even realize that if you're in this game, you are in the bloody ocean. And the ocean is not really for humans, you know? Like, we're not meant to be in there, bro. So it's like, once you're, like, you've got to be bloody careful.
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, the thing is that you kind of... Eventually, what's fascinating is that you start to recognize shark-infested waters.
Yes,
and so it's like, oh, okay, I don't even want anything to do with that.
Yeah, I'm not even going
to
be near there in case the shark just happens to be on the outskirts.
Exactly, exactly. You want to be as far from that as possible. And that's all part of the grind. But at the same time, I think depending on where you come from prior to the music, you know, what your street experience, because I think it really, like, street experience is probably one of the most fascinating for me, is that I'd already encountered sharks in general, you know, it's just like in life, man.
Like, you can tell are sharks because of, like,
bro,
we were talking a little bit when we first just connected up online about how some people can be so unaware of how much they give away just through their, like, you're not all fin, like, it's like, humans tend to, like, forget how they show themselves out to me.
Exactly.
Hey, man, you told me, like, that you're probably a shark, and it's right. Or, and then you have the people who genuinely are doing this, like, the action, the genuine shark move of, hey, I've just bitten you, how do you feel, you know?
It's bro, and those people scare the shit out of me. Like, I'm not gonna lie, like, that's crazy to me. It's like, but yeah, no, I mean, you learn all that, and that's all part of growth, exactly. And, like, I mean, I'll be honest, like, looking back on, I suppose, like, some of those experiences kind of get, like, it almost, like, triggers, like, anxiety in me, like, a little bit. I'm just like, oh, yuck, you know, like, yuck, what a yuck thing, like, whatever the hell that was. But, like, hey, look, like, we're here now, and as I say, like, because I've had these experiences, going forward, labels do make me nervous, because it's like, hey, there are some wicked people out there, but hey, why are they even going to be interested in me currently? Because I've still got things to do.
Exactly.
Like, for me,
that's what I find has helped me the same way, bro, is, you know, you genuinely start to, I guess, I listen to Jay Shetty's podcast, who's also a big inspiration, and he says, like, one of his little quotes he, like, flings out, he was like, I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I am who I think you think you think I am. and it's quite cool, but it makes sense more. And if you start to meditate or just kind of slow down and chisel out this big concourse of, I wouldn't say ego, but this whole sort of, this building you've made through just genuinely being involved. You know, especially when you're young, you just do it. Like, just hearing that, bro, you do all of this stuff. But one of the, like, the blessings of those experiences is the ability to take the good from it and leave the bad behind.
Yes.
You know, and that's something I think
very, very much
tuning
so.
In is a gem for everyone. Is like, that's the sort of, it's the same paranoia, the anxiety, but it's also like a strong weight or like a strong presence of, like, I know who I am now. I've been through that, you know?
I agree with that very much so, because, like, for me, something that's, as a lyricist, naturally, that's vulnerable. You know, naturally, it's going to be vulnerable. It's very vulnerable. It's like the second you start, like, putting your heart and soul into it, like, that's a very vulnerable thing. Yeah. And so I found, like, through my lyrics, they've evolved. Like, if you do a deep dive and listen to some of my older stuff, like, what you'll notice is that I'm singing to someone in the beginning, but it's like me giving inspiration to a person. But the reality is that, like, for anyone that, like, as I say, that has done this or wants to do a deep dive, like, those songs were written about me, but I made it seem probably like I was writing it about other people. But the reality is that, like, it was like, I need to, like, give myself some confidence almost in it. And so, like, I was writing, like, what I needed but I was making it sound as though it was for somebody else. I suppose you could say. And, yep. And now it's kind of like,
Yeah.
And I think like now I'm just sort of at a place where it's like, I don't need to do that anymore. Yeah. Like I just feel good. I feel good. And it's like, I don't want this whole thing to stop now. Yeah. You know, I'm just really content in the process. Wow. And so now my songs are very much like, look, this is exactly what I'm thinking. Here it is, and it's coming from me, and it is my thoughts, and it's very, you know, the whole thing feels cohesive now. Wow. So that's quite an interesting thing to have both up online, though.
Yeah.
Because on Spotify, I think when, you know, if we're talking labels, for instance, like if you send away your stuff and you go, hey, check out my stuff, if they go through it and then go, it doesn't feel cohesive, I'm actually thinking about taking a few things down off of the major platforms, just because it's, like, I feel like they're a little bit jarring. They might still be good songs and some people enjoy them, but I'll be like, just pop them on SoundCloud. You know, just pop them, you know, where it's in the places where it's not quite so important. Because like SoundCloud to me is kind of a database for projects.
There we go.
Whereas I don't think Spotify is a database for projects. No, I don't agree with that. I think Spotify is where you put your music when you're wanting it to be recognized.
Yeah, you
like truly recognized.
Put a cover up and maybe you'll still have a complaint and it's like, well, technically this is nothing out of, you know, so you're not using the instrument, but you know, like you said, there's like a whole different degree. Like I can put all my remixes up on SoundCloud and because they're like demos in a way, but they're also demos that are playable because I can look back at all my remixes now that I'm sort of on the same code book. I can see that journey through releases. I can see what fits what, like my Spotify things that are there. Like even when I was thinking what to put up for my SoundCloud, I was like, I'll put up my polished stuff on the Spotify. But I like the fact that I have unpolished stuff, and I love that I get to keep it on SoundCloud. Like,
yeah,
it's so
that's
cool.
The coolest part about that platform. See, I don't think
people
Spotify
love the unpolished stuff too.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, if your sound actually is unpolished, because there are plenty of like, you know, punk and genres that are actually unpolished.
Yeah.
If it's intentionally unpolished, then that's sick. But like, if the idea is that you're wanting this very clean thing, it's like that Spotify is not the place for unpolished stuff.
Yeah.
And I have unpolished stuff currently on Spotify.
Yeah.
100% I do. And so some of that I honestly think that some of it just needs to go.
Yeah.
And I'll put it in places so that the people that want to listen can still listen. But I want to get it to a point over the next year or two where I've got enough things in my repertoire that someone can go to my Spotify and go, holy shit, you know,
this is seriously
for real, this guy's doing it.
Something for everyone as well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think I've kind of found, for the most part, I think I've found my sound, which is cool. Because I don't know who the quote's by. I think it's a trumpet player, actually, like real old quote, and it's something along the lines of like, sometimes you have to play for a very long time before you start playing like yourself, or play like somebody else for a very long time before you start playing like yourself. And it's so true, because it's like, you know, in the beginning, you know, you take your inspirations and you just start doing what they do for ages.
Yeah.
And then eventually you find your own thing within that. And
everything's a remix to sort of
the
human nature of it, eh? It's like,
yeah.
You know, like we have come this far through remixing.
Totally.
And remixing was the key for me out of everything. I literally, my first ever SoundCloud uploads were mashups, and I was mashing up things out of key, but there was like section, you know, you get songs where in sections it's in key?
Yeah.
Those were my mashups. I was doing like Skrillex with like, I was doing like the Skrillex acapellas and instrumentals with sort of like a pop song, like a Katy Perry, and it would just sound bad the whole way through. It was like a little melodic part, and it just happened to be in key, because the whole tracks are out of key, and then they just fit in with a couple notes. I'm like, I could actually hear how I was genuinely trying with what I had to sort of like pick out what I loved and like, follow that sort of everything as a remix.
I tell you what though, bro, like there are moments in some of those, like especially in like DJ sets and stuff, where there's those moments of dissonance where two things are playing and it's like, oh, that's so clashing. But at the same time, it's like, you know, if it's done well, it's actually really quite a cool experience as it kind of like, you know, blends into the next thing. But yeah, I mean, if you're playing whole songs, you know, whole songs where they're just clashing together, that's rough. But yeah, that's, you're totally right, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool. Because like, I listen back to some of the stuff I made at UCO and it's like, some people, you know, non-musos who hear it go, oh, you know, it's not that bad. I'm like, oh, dude, it's horrific.
Yeah. The muso on me singing, like,
exactly.
At least get the harmony. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And I think more than anything, like what I used to do, which it cracks me up because this is something that I suppose I've just navigated my way out of over time, but at you call. I would like, you know, when I'd make a song, what would happen is I'd lay down a chord progression and it would just repeat over and over and over and over. And then like my melody would be like really simple and just chilling on top of it. And then, you know, and then the hook would be the same. And it's like always the same strategy towards writing a song. And fortunately that has sort of changed now, I suppose. Like I've actually worked out how to put in like, I suppose just different vibes, like you know, so that you get to a part in a song, like, you know, first and second verse shouldn't be the same. It shouldn't feel like the exact same. There should be difference.
More on the palette, eh?
Exactly. More exactly. And so that's probably been the biggest focus as of recently. It's just composition and actually making it all come together really nicely. So
Oh, that's so cool, my man. Well, yeah, sharing that sort of affinity there. So sort of moving into, I guess more sort of cool people and places you met, because we spoke a bit earlier before the show as well. It's quite fascinating, like it's probably a few more names that we've got. Oh, we both know them. It's so, like, as you said, it's so cool in the music game. So it's sort of like we talked a bit about you, Cole. Feel free to like share some names of Palmy Cats or people you met, places you've been, my bro.
Yeah, 100%. So people that like come to mind straight away. Coco Nashi. You know Coco Nashi? Yeah, bro. Coco Nashi are sick. And like all those dudes are wicked. So Perry and I were, Perry got me started, like straight up, like just got me started.
Perry's
on
the podcast in a couple of weeks.
True. Yeah. Oh, cool, bro. Yeah. So Perry got me into guitar. Because as I say, I was going to be a guitarist. So it was just one of those things, because he was already a wizard. Like honestly, like when I met him, he was already good. Yeah. Like, and this is years ago. Probably got to be 6 years, 6 or 7 years now. Long time. Yeah. But when I first met him, he was already amazing. And so I was like, man, there's something about his playing as well. It's very easy to recognize. It's like, oh, that's Perry playing. And so when I heard him, it was like, oh, okay. Like, I kind of want to be able to do that. And so, you know, I got on the grind and was starting to like do my thing. And that was working. So yeah, Perry's definitely one of them, and Coco Nashi. So I'm actually not even 100% sure who's in that.
Yeah,
it's quite
too.
A big unit,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it used to just be him and Jimmy.
That's it. Wow.
And now I think there's five members. Something like that. James Feeks, Ronald Jones. All those cats. Alex Debenham, he's a dude for he's in Coco now, but he was a friend of mine from high school. So I mean, who else? Skits Hydro, know, like all those cats. Yeah. Achille, Kane.
Yeah.
I forgot his name, Ruben.
Ruben. Well,
all those cats. Who else we got? I mean, Ripple?
Yeah,
Ripple Effect?
Exactly.
Look at Ripple. Holy moly, bro.
Right.
I've been good friends with Sage. Like, similar length of time. Because Sage did course with me. So I was on CERT, he was on Diploma.
Wow.
Honestly, like that whole unit, I really got to shout them all out, bro. Like, drones, bro. Isaac, Isaac Chamberlain, he's my cousin. Which is quite funny. So he you know, instigated Machete Clan and all that. So he's on a bloody trip of his own.
Yeah.
He's got some cool stuff that's just come out, the Funked Up EP by Something Zesty. If anyone wants to check that out, that's pretty cool, bro. Like that's a cool little thing.
Keep going, but there's a lot of people.
Bro, it just goes on and on. That's the other thing, is that it just goes on and on. I could sit here for like 2 hours and just rattle off names, because it is like that. That's kind of what the industry sort of turned into. Even Justin Palmy, bro, it amazes me how many people are like doing their thing.
You've seen Carson Tutty out there as well. Like,
yeah, bro. Yeah. So Carson's an interesting one, because I met Carson when I don't know how old he was, but he was a baby.
Whoa.
He was a baby, not an actual baby,
he was
a child.
He was a child.
And like, here's me, like, broke as, just like, you know, grinding away. And he's this like little kid, basically. He's like rocking up and playing like really good shows and like really talented dude. Yeah. Carson's definitely someone who should go on the list. Hannah Tamatea, Hans Music, definitely one to throw in. She's written some really cool stuff, bro. Because at UCOL, I mean, naturally, so she's in Ripple now, and I think that Ripple, you know, is kind of the driving force at the moment.
Yes.
But honestly, like some of the things that she's done over time have been really amazing, bro. Like I've been blown away. Like at UCOL, there was a couple of moments where I was just like, wow, that's a song. It's got a really unique vibe, eh?
Yeah.
So
That's right. Yeah, it's cool.
People. Oh, bro, it just goes on. I could name like a zillion. And honestly, if I have left anybody out, I'm sorry. Because it's not personal at all.
It's genuine what it is, bro.
I think of the top of my head, eh?
It is what it is, man.
Like, yeah, I mean, I had a friend from high school, Caitlin Little. She was a vocalist, and went to jazz school, did all that, and then she was in Sky Canvas. I don't know if she's still in Sky Canvas. I'm not too sure. I haven't like really followed the whole thing too much. It's just everyone's on their own grind. Yes, so I'm like, exactly. I get so distracted. I don't even know who's in what band anymore.
That's right, bro.
But at the same time, like honestly, all these people are phenomenally talented, and you wish nothing but the best for them, I think. Like, you have to, because...
Yeah, you realise it's a big world out there and there's so much room for us all. It's like you...
Exactly. I've never been one to get jealous. Like, it's funny, someone pitched me something the other day, right?
Yeah.
Who, I was telling them about Machete Clan and how Machete had their mat on the rock blowing up and getting huge and stuff, and right? And how it kind of started as a bit of a joke, you know, they started as a joke and it blew up, so like that to me, like, so we were having that conversation and he said to me, he was just like, that's got to be gutting for you as someone who's like, you know, not wanting to blow up as such, but you know, I'm wanting people to hear my music and you know, and trying to get that going, and he was like, that must be gutting for you. And I was like, not at all. Because to me, I'd rather, you know, the journey just...
Yeah, exactly.
Journey just has to play out the way that it plays out, and I'm happy with that. And, you know, if we're talking things like fame, fame scares the shit out of me, bro. It's something that I've said for a long time, and I'm not sure people believe me, because it kind of sounds like a contradiction when you say, I want as many people to hear my music as possible. But I don't want to be famous, you know?
Look at Hans Zimmer, bro. He's an example of someone who does music for himself.
Mm.
People are watching the movies. They're watching all the actors. But Hans Zimmer is actually in that space of people listen to his music. People don't even realize they're listening
to
his music.
You can walk past them in the street.
He'll be wearing his top hat and who knows, get a haircut. And
most people wouldn't recognize Hans Zimmer.
There we go. Exactly.
But, you know, like when you're, especially soloists, I find soloists have this thing that if they blow up, and then it becomes sort of like, you can't even go and get your groceries.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, dude, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's still a privileged lifestyle.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, you know.
You've always got somewhere there, I would guess. But it's having to actually go through that as well.
Definitely. And like, I don't consider myself like a super anxious person, but there's certainly an element of anxiety in my life. Like, for sure.
Right.
I definitely have some degree of it. And so something like that, to me, I don't know how well that would be.
I don't know how well I'd handle it.
But again, like, that's not the goal. The goal to me is just to have people listen more than anything. I just want people to listen. And if you hate it, like, you know, whatever. Just check it out. Like, if you want to check it out. Like, for me, like, that's probably the biggest thing, because there's something really cool about just even knowing that, regardless of whether they liked it or not, that someone hit play on your song and just to have a listen. And I think
I can see what yelling does. It's like, like the intention was never to like, do that. It's just like, put too many years. It's like, just put it out there, you know? Yeah. It's like you said, it's just people, if they hit play, it's that awareness that's enough, you know?
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah, and honestly,
10 seconds of it, 10 seconds, that's enough. You know
what I love the most is how you can release something and, you know, 100 people could listen. Let's say like 1 in 100 people come to you and they go, I'm just thrashing the song, I love it. What more could you do?
Be happy on your deathbed with that one.
Yeah,
as well.
What more could you do it for?
Yeah.
Like, I had a one of my, I suppose, like, you could probably say, like, the fan of mine that's played my music the most.
Wow.
I've got a mate, Sadwin, and his girlfriend, Kelly. Kelly played my song Worthy when that first dropped. She played it, no exaggeration, day 2 or 3, it got like 200 and something streams, and I was like, what?
Clearly not a group of people.
I thought it was a group of people. Turned out what had happened is she'd gone to work and she'd had it in her headphones and she had it on repeat, but then she didn't realize that it was just still going, and it was in her ears, but she was just like loving it, I suppose. Yeah. And like, she'd message me about it and tell me like how much it helped her and stuff. And you know, and that's so cool, because you come out the other side of because honestly, like where I was at mentally, when that song dropped, I was a mess, bro. And so just to hear something like that is very, very cool. And I sort of encourage it, I suppose, for non-musos. If you've got muso friends, like seriously, like you gotta, like you don't have to love what they do. But I think that just telling them that, hey, well done, congratulations on doing something is actually really cool. It goes a long way.
My friend in Wellies, shouts to Ed. And like, there's the guy at Juice TV, he's like, oh, this is not, I'm not usually into trap. I'm like, bro, I'm not either. I was just around trap heads. And the next thing you know, I'm like, oh, I made a trap project. I didn't mean to do this, you know? Yeah. Those are the spontaneous trips to Mickers and BP, catching on the vibes of people in town. It's like, oh, like the people out there enjoying their night, you know, in town coming home at 3 a.m. for Mackers, like, that's my canvas. And sure. So I can write to that, and I can sort of see how, like, when people are like, ah, yeah, like, it might not really be like your cup of tea, but people will just be like, oh, no, it's cool, like, you're here doing this, man, like, keep it up, bro, like, you, and like, I enjoyed the fact that people kind of got to see, I didn't really care about what people thought, like, people were just like, ah, oh, you're using the word, ah, oh. Like, and I generally, like, till this day, I'll turn up, like, people will say, oh, yeah, you kind of look like your homies. Like, yeah, I like that, because that was my upbringing. You, yeah, like, I didn't feel at home at home. Mm. Like, I'll be honest, and like, a lot of people don't, bro. Like, sure. That was my paranoid place of experience, and yeah, I stayed away from home. And I feel so blessed to be able to, like, own the story. Mm. And that's why I had to do those little video segments. Is like, those were just as important as the track. For me, those little chilling out in the town. I'm not sure if you saw them, but
yeah, no, I've seen those. I did see those.
I was like, I was in the right sort of frame that day. I woke up with a whole bunch of energy. I'm like, no, I haven't had a day feeling that energetic since. Just genuinely,
it happens, bro. Like, I remember I hit up she's my flatmate now, but I hit up my friend Elise before we were living together, and I said to her, like, one evening, I said, like, hey, do you want to, like, go and film, like, a time-lapse of the sun rising? Just for the hell of it, bro. What is that? Like, you know, why? Yeah. Like, why did I do that? That was a weird thing, because I don't do that very often. But, hey, we got up at, like, you know, 5 a.m. I picked her up and drove down to the river and, you know, filmed this thing. And then I made some music to it and just made a project. And that's all it is. It's nothing more. It's not, like, not putting it out and trying to make it into something forcing that everybody... forcing it or anything like that. I just wanted to make something that day. And, I, you know, you have moments like that. And I think that the thing that I, and this is for anyone who probably, like, I suppose, like, is struggling with that, like, writer's block or anything like that, is, like, honestly, just do your thing.
Go with it.
Just
go
with the flow. Like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Like, it's not something that, if you sit down and go, like, I need to write this, you know, I have to get this done, it has to be like this.
Yeah,
it's like, cool, like, good luck.
Good luck.
That doesn't happen. Like, never happens, man. Yeah. And hey, like, there might be someone out there that can do it, but I tell you what, the people that do that for a living, you know, what you'll find is that everything's a little bit samey.
Yeah,
quite genuinely, like, people that get in and force a track, it is quite samey, because you're not going to invent something new every day.
Exactly.
You can't. You just can't. Like, no one can do that. And so you start to regurgitate the same thing over and over. Hey, it might be subtly different, but it's still, it's not pushing the limits. Whereas you will push your own limits just with time.
Yeah.
Just with time. And you need to grind, but you don't need to, be writing. Like, people, you know, these people go, like, I'm going to write a hit.
Yeah. Like, people talk about albums as well. Like, that's what always gets you. You hear, like, the amount of people say, I want to make an album, and it's like, it's the pinnacle of, like, the EP.
I'll tell you what, though. I'm honestly, I'm sold on singles at the moment.
Me
like,
too.
I'm making singles, bro.
Me too,
like, singles only place. Really make sense because
how
I'm looking at it is that the amount of money that's going into a project, because I don't self-produce, so, like, I'm throwing thousands of dollars of this stuff. So like, if I make an album, you know, album, bro, it's like 20 grand or more.
The mastering guy doesn't say, oh yeah, let's do the whole thing for the price of a track. No, it's the other way around. I'm having to listen to your voice for 5 years.
Yeah, it'd be like a small mortgage, bro, to make an album. And don't get me wrong, that's gonna happen one day.
Yeah.
100%. Like, I will make that happen. But at the same time, currently, like, if we're being realistic, let's focus on singles and let's actually try and get some recognition through, like, you know, some of these bigger networks and people see if I can start playing bigger shows and yada yada, and actually generating an income that's not coming from playing covers, because that's what I'm doing at the moment. Like, you know, I play bars, cafes, restaurants, blah blah blah, like game, you know, weddings, all that kind of stuff. And it's all covers, and it's not my stuff.
Nah, yeah.
And hey, don't get me wrong, I do enjoy it because I just love music.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah, but it's good in every
exactly. All avenues of music, I'm down. You know, like it's cool. But at the same time, I'd love to be able to play my own stuff, and you know, and eventually maybe put together like a band to really take it to the next level and all that kind of stuff. But well, all that's, you know, in the future. But I think really more than anything, don't exactly know where I was going with that. It's kind of lost
No, I kind of did too. It's amazing. We dive so deep into the idea of time is the greatest healer. Like, and some people kind of, oh, my life's growing before my eyes. It's like, it's that thought of like people talk about time doesn't exist, like it's real spirituality. I believe it. Like in terms of like the times that like I was just genuinely not feeling pressured by time, it would genuinely be like a longer, more fulfilling day.
Yeah.
And like for my, even this, you know, this year I've, you know, enjoyed the challenges of work, and sometimes I'd feel the pressure and I'd check my phone like 20 times before I walk up to the next job on site, on campus. Shouts to the UCO homies. And you know, like that's human nature. You feel pressured by time. But like a great realization I think we're sitting down that we can have, that I've just heard from you as well, is like, yeah, time is the greatest healer, eh? Like the power of time, rather than just this sort of, oh, I'm incredible, like a writer's block. But no, you're not. Time is working for you.
Yeah, just to add a point, like, you know, maybe you could argue that writer's block is a thing, but I think that what you're suggesting when you say that you've got writer's block is that you're
actually speaking into being, I think. That's what I think anyway, because like I'll have people talk about writer's block.
But it sounds like you're trying to make something. You know what I'm saying? Like, what it sounds like is that you're sitting down and you're going, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, it's like, and that's
that's what the writer's block is. That's not the process.
Yeah, like a writer, a true writer would never feel what is a block. I mean, like, what is it? Great artists steal, if you just genuinely sort of like, oh, I'm picking a bit of time to just have some down, like, I think a great artist almost like picks the times just as much as the ideas of taking a break.
Definitely.
We talk about taking the break on the podcast, because it's a pretty like humdy conversations. We're like, oh yeah, like take a break.
Yeah. Oh, bro, I think it's so important. I think it's like, I would almost say that that's your bread and butter in some ways, because after I released Do It All Again, so that was out in September, bro. And I told you how I hit that wall, and I was like, I don't know what I need to do. What the hell do I do now, kind of thing. You know, I was lost.
Yeah. The last thing I want to do is take a break because of how much I'm... Yeah.
But at the same time, bro, I was also like, I can't... I didn't sing or play guitar, not even exaggerating, for 3 months.
Yeah.
At all. I just went, kaboom, shut it down. That's and it, people are like, oh, why didn't you promo the track much? And I was like, honestly... Once that was released, I wasn't in a good place, man. Yeah. Like, I wasn't. I wasn't, like, hard out depressed or anything, but I just had this feeling of, like, I need to... Because I had so much... I feel like I always recognized my trajectory in that sense. Like, I could always see where I kind of was at. And once that track released, I all of a sudden had this moment where I was like, I don't know what the hell is next.
Man.
I don't know what I want. I don't know. Any of that
like
is just
a million
gone.
Miles an hour.
I got nothing to work on, you know, et cetera. There's no project in the works. And so like all of a sudden I had all this free time. And naturally, I mean, anyone will know this. If you just sit around on your own, you kind of start to get in your own head a lot.
Yes, human nature, yes.
Yeah, and I think that that's a, it's something to monitor because, hey, everybody needs their alone time.
Thank you, bro.
You do need to be very careful because that you can spiral quite quickly out of control.
Yeah, like just going down a big, downhill. And then because you're trying to kind of, oh, I'll go down this hill. And then like, you're trying to stop. You're like, I was as a kid, I was always just like going down those big hills running. And then halfway down, you're like, oh, fuck, I'm not going to.
Yeah, I can't stop.
Like, this is fucking dumb. Yeah. And you'd trip, you'd hurt yourself. Yeah. You'd get it back.
And hey, like, honestly, like, if it, like,
great analogy.
I mean, this is a bit deep, bro. Like, I think that, like, it's very, like, humans naturally, I think, find self-sabotage to be addictive.
Yes.
And it's actually like, it feels like, you know, once you start going down that rabbit hole, it's like, oh, I'll just ride it then. You know, yeah. I'll just let it happen. And yeah. it's like, oh, we'll just see what it takes.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a crazy perspective, because all you're really doing is self-sabotaging. Yeah. And I've done enough of that now.
Me too, bro.
Like, I'm just at that point now where it's like, you know, if I have like, everybody has their dark days, but I think that, for the most part, like for me in this situation, I just knew I needed a break.
Yeah.
So I took 3 months off and I just did nothing. And coming back, interestingly enough, like, I mean, you've heard the new demo, it's totally different. It's something different. Yeah. And it's because I took that time off. If I'd kept going, just trying to smash it, you know, if I tried to force it and go, hey, I need to make it sound, I need to make something bigger and better than do it all again. It's like, that would have been a real struggle.
Yeah.
And
who knows what, the future. Yeah.
It probably wouldn't have like amounted to anything, to be honest. I probably would have just gotten like gutted and been like, oh shit. Like, But like, you know, here we are and I've got something totally like new and I feel like it's still cohesive and whatnot, but it's you know, it's like it all feels
the
like
the testimony,
It'll come together and I'm very excited, bro. I'm just excited.
Me too.
I'm just like, let's just kind of keep the ball rolling. There's no particular like speed I need to get things done at and all that kind of thing. Like, because I used to focus heaps on that, bro.
Oh, me too.
So it was always just like, oh, this has to be done this way or else it's not correct and yada yada. And it's like, oh, hang on. You know, just like, you know, hit the brakes. Actually, like, really think through like the whole process and what you really want and does it actually matter in the way that you think that it matters and blah blah blah.
Yes.
And yeah, you know, and eventually what you're gonna find is that you're just chilling.
Yeah.
And once you're chilling, that's actually your best place. Is where you're just like, okay, I'm just doing my thing.
Yeah.
And you know, and you cut out the people that are
even though just, sometimes it does mean work as well. I mean, it's toxic, comes in all forms, eh, bro? Oh, the people.
Yeah. I mean, there's people that, hey, like, I've pissed off because I've said, hey, I don't want to do business with you. And they're friends. They are friends. And I've said, like, look, I don't want to work with you. Yeah. You're a great mate.
Yeah.
But I don't, like, you know, let's not do business because business is an interesting thing, bro.
It is.
Like, I find
people's
people's true colors absolutely come out in the realm of business, bro. And look, like, there are some people, and musos.
Most
like,
people aren't unaware of it as well, which is the whole dynamic on why you can stay friends with that, because you know what. You know what you know from being a friend. And sometimes, like, it's that journey. So business is like a deep dive into, like, everything about that person. And sometimes we as humans aren't ready for that, both from ourselves not being able to perceive who we are in front of others and vice versa.
Exactly. You know? And, I mean, the worst thing ever would be to fall out through business with a mate. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't want that. And so there's people that I'd, like, you know, I'd just rather not. And the other thing as well to keep in mind is that musicians, like, let's be honest, like, if we're talking the grand scheme of musicians, time management is a big factor. You know, like, this is a fact. Like, no one's arguing this. Like, there are people that are punctual, but they are, you know, few and far between. Like, there's not, all, like, as many as I wish there was.
Oh, I totally it's like, hey, it's called having 20 alarms on your phone. And
so, I mean, people ask me why I never wanted to be in a band. Mm. And like, for me, it was always that. It was like, I can barely get my shit sorted.
Yeah.
And I am getting my
being
shit sorted.
Being honest about
it. It is like,
I'm being humble enough to admit it as well to people.
Sure,
People will hit me up and I'm just like, genuinely, hey bro, like, I'm gonna set a couple alarms here. My phone does a thing every now. And I'm, because I'm so genuine, I feel at peace with my honesty of
it's
like
cool, bro.
My honesty to say, hey bro, I'm not even there yet myself, man. Yeah. It's like, it's how I used to be a people pleaser, bro.
Yeah. Oh bro, you're talking to the right person on that. Bro, honestly, hard out. And it's a very hard realization, or harsh realization, that day where you go, holy shit, this is like my problem. This isn't a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, you thought you were gonna be loved by everyone, and then you know, this is like this moment that like it sinks in, and you're like, holy shit, like I actually need to like, I need to do a full 180 and get myself out of this, because it's like, it's a nightmare, man. And people just use you. Like, you get like these sociopaths and stuff that just like come in, you know, they come into your life just like, you know.
It runs deep, eh?
Cool, man. Yeah, honestly, every time I like meet a sociopath now, I just spot them. Because I used to be that dude that was just getting used by all these people. And it's
sometimes
like,
you're aware of it, but you think, well, that's my sort of where I hold myself in life. Just, you know, that's who they are, but I'm just trying to be the super hand to help myself, really. You know, that's the best. It's like your own crutch, you know, like for me, people pleasing.
Yeah.
I mean, I was literally in the mosque getting told off from my mum. because yeah, I share the story now. I shared it with the Yella. I was literally in a zero-sum game with religions, and it was like they were the same religion. I was like, I got 15. I was like, oh, you guys are both agreeing in your books that you're from the same source, but you just got your own remix on it. But like, they didn't see it, and so I was like, sure. Hey, I was obeying my parents, mom. Like, I'm obeying. Yeah, so it was like
sure.
The moment I obeyed one parent, I disobeyed the other. Yeah, the other moment I didn't obey, so I had to obey and then disobey in the process. But I got to go to the mosque, you know, like over 500 times. I've been to the church, like, you know, maybe 1,000. Like, that, to grow from that and realize, hey, people pleasing helped me while I was young and I needed a roof over my head, cool. But like, it's cool how people pleasing, if you get through it, and you see sort of like, I guess, people pleasing helps you at the time, you know, it's, but you come out and you're like, I can still find time to please myself too.
Yeah. Well, the other thing with people pleasing is that you're not even real.
Yeah.
You know, you're not even real. Like, that's crying. My issue with it, is that you're not real. If you're people pleasing, yeah. You're not real.
Like a robot, like, who's next in the line?
Yeah, and you're just changing yourself to you know, for each person. And the problem with it, bro, is that it's like, people aren't that malleable. Like, you know, like,
damn it, I'm not malleable.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good. And honestly, it's something that once I cut out of my life, things started to get so much better. And you know, things came my way because it's about being, to a certain extent, disagreeable. Yeah. Not hard out.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to
like, hey, not you,
fucking get out of here. Yeah. Wherever that middle ground is,
you find your way.
To me, I mean, it's like, you know, if you don't ask for a raise, you're probably not going to get a raise, you know, kind of thing, like, or whatever it may be in life, you know, genuine. There's heaps of stuff like that, and I think it's just about getting out there and actually having the stones to actually go and do it, and once you start doing it, it gets easier, gets easier, and so, like, you know, and the funny thing about being a people pleaser is that you're going to piss people off anyway. Yeah, like, you can't even avoid it, bro. There's still going to be people that get shitty with you. And it's like, oh, man, I was doing everything I thought.
Yeah,
I was doing.
The mosque church. Oh, bro, hard, bro. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I'm so glad we spoke about that. And yeah, like, it's, for me, it's been talking to myself, which is a totally cool thing to do in terms of if you just genuinely give yourself. Because the mind, the subconscious mind and the actual mind, so... You know, it's why I used to go to KFC. Like, I used to be like, addicted to the junk food. Like, you know, like, I had my crutches. Sure. Like, you never realize what you're doing. So I'd start to like get a handle on it, bro. So I'd be like, I'd be at the KFC drive through. I've ordered $50 worth of whatever. And I'm like, hey, I spent all that money. And then I'd get to the next window and I'd just drive through. So like, I've cooked it all up. Conglomerates. What are conglomerates lost? Well, you know, that's $20 we can't use on billboard and advertising. Damn it!
There's mega corporations.
The staff gets to eat. You know, so I realized, wow, Samir, you've done that for yourself. You actually did something for yourself. And I'm part of a father's group. Even though I'm not a father, I realized there was a father in the community, whether I liked it or not. I was like, oh shit. I got some work to do. And bro, we've got to an amazing point in this where we've literally just talked about those things that have helped grow in us. Sure. And I hope people can take a leaf, because for someone listening here, they might be they might genuinely not feel about how they can fit in, and they try to find all these ways just to feel like they can fit in life, and they might come home and they'll cry, and you know, they'll just be, you know, feel like, man, you know, and that was me. And there are people in your life that can help you learn that you can love yourself too.
Yeah, and work out whether or not people are actually taking from you or giving something, you know, enriching you, I suppose. So, because if they're enriching your life, well then, keep them around, that's perfect. Yeah. If they're taking and taking and taking and taking, and I just mean your energy, I don't mean tangible stuff.
Yeah.
If they're taking your stuff, definitely cut them out of your life.
Obvious.
I mean, that's an obvious one, but no, if they're just like draining your vibe, then it's time to go, you know. It's get rid of them because honestly, there's I've been that person for people. Yeah. I've been that person, that person that's taking away from someone's vibe. I've been that person. And it's not like, not because I was being malicious, but just because I wasn't in a good place and it was draining them. And so they, you know, they went and did their thing. And it's important, bro. Yeah. You don't need to hold like these hardcore grudges or anything like that. It's not like that. It's just like, just do what works for you.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, there's nothing more to it, man. It really is like, okay, just like when you get up in the morning, like what is making you feel good? What is making you feel bad? And those things that are making you feel bad, you slowly just tackle it one at a time. Yes. And eventually things, like more things feel good than bad. And then once you're in that place, then you actually become very creative, and you can actually get stuff done.
So I love about children, they always know what to do for them, like making themselves happy.
Yeah, of course they do. Of course they do. It's because there's not a worry in the world. Yeah. And hey, everyone's always going to have something negative kind of around.
Yeah, talking about
But finding that, like, you just want the ratio of good to bad to be in favor of the good, you know? Yeah. Like, and so once you're in that place, I think that's where life almost begins.
Yeah,
in the weirdest way.
The self-mastery, being aware.
Because you're not really living when you're just sitting around moping.
Nah,
you know?
You're not.
Bro, I have been there. You know, like, I think everyone has to a certain extent, but I've been there. I've spent years doing that, man. Like, I'm probably like 17 through 20.
I'm getting to 23.
It started to sort of fade out maybe like 22-ish, somewhere around there.
I'm around now.
Yeah, 22, 23.
I'm 23.
Bro, you were so tall, man. I thought you'd be like 27, something like that. Like,
yes.
Crazy, bro. Crazy.
Yes. No, that's a cool thing. I love being the Joker. Like, ha! I'm a bit of a Joker. And I'm tapping back into it. But yeah, man. Get more towards our favorite part in the show, where we sort of share those gems. I will share a big one just then. But yes, all on the more practical sides, might be some cool things you've done, like whether it's practical on your computer or things that you might think, like we can touch over again. What are some things for people tuning in who are really keen? They just want to kind of hear your little testimony and maybe even like a couple encouraging words there, my bro. Yeah.
Sure. So, I mean, if we're talking about things that I've done and accomplished and yada yada, so like obviously we've talked already about the recording side of things, but in terms of gigs, there's been a few that I've played where, like, and things aren't massive. Like, I've never played a festival, never done any of that. And hey, maybe one day, I hope to play one day. But like, I have never done all that sort of thing. But I have played to a packed Globe Theatre, which was very cool. Wow. And this is like something that like my name was on the poster kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like this thing was packed. And that was the first time where I came out and got the like a real opportunity to engage with the audience
and see it there.
And stop and go, wow, like, you know, like, what? Because the thing is that when you first start, and this really does, like, to any muso that's just starting out, like when you feel like that's years and years and years away, because I had this like goal, right, that I was going to achieve, like, I don't know, playing to bars and stuff within 5 years, and I did it in one. I got there in one. And so it was like, okay, whoa. Things actually happen fast. You know, if you're on the grind, things happen fast because people will put you in places because they recognize that you're on the grind.
I see.
Which is really cool.
I noticed that one.
Yeah, 100%. And so for me, like, that, just to walk out, and I think at this point I was probably about 3 years in, and I'm standing in front of this packed Globe Theatre, and, you know, and I played this show, and I played all my own music and yada yada and all that stuff, and there was just so, like, something about that moment. And I actually took a leaf out of Jacob Collier's book, and I did the whole audience sort of like get one side singing one thing, one side singing the other, a couple of harmonies and stuff, and like experimented with that. And it was just a really cool time. And what I've actually learned that I'm quite good at, because I never had the confidence on stage for so long, what I learned that I'm quite good at is I can actually make an audience laugh. Like, quite easily too. Like, I'm actually pretty good at it. And so I think what actually kept people engaged wasn't just the fact that obviously they were enjoying the music, or I think they were anyway. They seemed to be enjoying the music. I was getting applause, so whatever. Yeah. But you know, after each song, they'd kind of look forward to, oh, what's he gonna say now? Because I'm one of those people that I just say what I'm thinking for the most
part.
Thank
you, bro.
You know, I think it's important. And I was never very good at it for a long time, but I am now.
It feels good. You know, you're yourself, and I think I take a huge sort of thing looking at that. Like, do your thing, and people kind of people catch it, people notice it. Talk about energy pool, people feel the energy, eh? And people aren't always aware of it. So like, I think this is a big takeaway. Sort of like in terms of any practical things, my man, for people, especially if they're getting like songwriting, recording, production stuff, sort of share about like, you know, what did you find work for you? Was there a particular software, or do you recommend just trying them all out? What's your sort of?
I started on Logic. That was only because that's what Yuko had.
Nice.
You know, and honestly, I think Logic, if you've got a Mac, then, I mean, it's so user-friendly, it's wicked. If you don't have a Mac, then honestly, I'm pretty proficient in a few. As far as I know my way around them. I don't claim to be an incredible producer, yeah, exactly. But I just know my way around the software. Yeah. You know, Fruity Loops, if you're into Fruity Loops, something, which I did, you know, I played around in Fruity for ages, years, because that's just what I had on Windows. Yeah. And then recently I got Cubase, and I think that's where I'm going to stay.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to stay. It's just like, to me, Cubase is like Logic for Windows for the most part. It just seems very user-friendly.
Timeline,
and, I would say Cubase is probably what I'd recommend. For people, in terms of like, I suppose like on the songwriting front of things, and especially if you're a lyricist, I honestly think, I'm trying to think what a good piece of advice would be for that, because
GarageBand's an amazing thing. Like the amount of music we hear on radio and don't realize it was made on GarageBand.
That's the funny one.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is that you can tweak stuff if you really know what you're doing. You can tweak stuff on anything. At least people who make
Audacity.
Audacity. You can do whatever. But I think probably in terms of like if we're talking about a skill that I think I've honed pretty damn well that I could maybe pass on to people, or at least inspire people to give a go, is like with songwriting. I think like the best thing you can do is just write. Just write.
Don't put a wall on it.
And you know what's fascinating is that what you'll do is if you make like a songbook and you just write things, and I don't even mean whole songs, don't even structure, don't even go verse, you know, chorus, verse, you know, whatever. Don't worry about all that.
Put a box.
Just write things that you think are interesting. Sorry. And what's going to happen is you're going to accumulate all this writing, and you know, eventually you're gonna have all these pages, and there's gonna be moments where you're flicking through, and one of them all of a sudden
resonates,
and it triggers something, and now you've got another line that you didn't before, and or you might find two parts that are cohesive with one another, and away you go. Like the song that I reference in regards to that is what's it called? Sings from an Italian Restaurant by Billy Joel.
Yeah,
it's not a song that was written in one go. It's actually multiple songs that they put together in the end. That's what it is. And so I think that's so fascinating, because it's true.
Yeah.
It's so true. That's how you get into it, honestly. Yeah. I'm serious. Like there's no better way to approach it than just to start writing. And write every day.
Save it, because you never know.
And I mean,
it was yellow. I still have the profile 2 years later, 3 years later. Because the plugin's not opening, bro. Like my whole life, I got 400 project files sitting. This is my life. Like you said, bro, you just never know.
For real, man. All right, I've got to make a mission because it's
ripping up the show. Just wanted to thank you so much, my bro, for being on the podcast.
Hey, and, thank you, my man. Yeah, it's very cool.
People can check you out on all places, really.
Spotify is great. If you want to go to Spotify, if you've got Spotify, check me out on Spotify. That's probably the I highly appreciate that.
Yes. Got your Facebook,
Adam Lee, ADAM LEE. You can. Honestly, the song that I'd say check out first is "Do It All Again," just because it's the best one.
Yeah,
in my eyes, anyway.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's a great people. So for people who want to start there and follow your socials as well, obviously.
Yeah, too. Adam Lee Music NZ on Facebook, and I think Adam Lee Music on Instagram.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. Hey, thank you, my man.
Thanks so much. Fun. Yeah. Well, for everyone listening, that was episode 36/37 of Beat Whānau and with Adam Lee. So thank you all for your support. We didn't get here without your help and support. So please continue sharing. Please stay tuned for more testimony. Without further ado, this has been Beat Whānau Podcast. Peace and love, Whānau.